What the If is brought to you by listeners like you, thanks to our Patreon members, patreon.com/whattheif. Go there now and find out how you can become a member and get all kinds of cool rewards. And thank you for supporting our mission for science education and science fun. Welcome to What the If. Illegible edition. Illegible edition. That was just a tease, illegible edition of our If that's coming up in a moment. But first, let's welcome to the virtual What the If Studios. He's always here. You know him, you love him. Professor Matthew Stanley. How are you? From New York University.
It is Friday.
Yes.
New York continues its own universe and university, pulling us together. And it would be nice if it was not winter anymore, but
that. It lingers.
Yeah.
It stings. Well, maybe that's, is the eclipse going to come? Is the eclipse, does the eclipse affect meteorology? Must for momentarily.
It gets cold, noticeably cold if you're in totality. And there, I think there's still some disagreement about whether it can cause rain. There's sort of anecdotal reports that a sudden drop in temperature can cause rain too, but I don't think that's been confirmed.
That's interesting. And I imagine depending on the humidity of where you're at, you feel the coldness hitting you within the few minutes of the eclipse. Like if you're in a very dry climate, you would feel that chill right away, right?
No, that is presumably true.
Yeah, very cool. So we're looking ahead to the eclipse, by the way, just a brief plug for the solar eclipse, because it can't do its own advertising, although it seems to, I think the sun has to have a social media account, don't you think?
Well, back in the old days, the whole Apollo thing. Apollo is the sun's PR guy.
Oh, you don't mean the space mission. You mean the Greek god.
No, I mean the actual deity.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Hail Apollo. and to my mind, that brought up the image of a character, a wonderful character from Battlestar Galactica, the original Battlestar Galactica.
The original one.
Yeah. Played by Richard Hatch, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Who also came back for the new Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah. Very good. Good stuff. So this week, we have, once again, a missive sent to us. And we love getting your cards and letters and emails and other electronic communications. Lars from Sweden wrote in. Now, he actually sent this in his last missive. And we wanted to save it because I thought it was such a good idea. He has an idea for an if, which we will run with today. And once again, I remind you, listeners, if you have an idea for if, have you ever been walking around and suddenly thought, what if? Matt, what's the strangest place where an if may have come to mind for you?
I don't know. Is New York City count?
It counts.
Yeah.
So not particularly specific, but
no. No.
At the corner of 32nd and Lexington.
I mean, some stories are like that, right? Leo Szilard says he tells a story of figuring out how an atomic bomb would work while crossing a specific traffic intersection.
Oh, wow.
I'd have to look up the address, but he says exactly it.
Yeah. That's interesting. I wonder if there's a sign there now. Stop. Stop. Physicists must stop. Stop and look.
Physicists must stop. Yeah.
Stop, look, and listen. Lars wrote... let's see. He says, what the if the human race suddenly no longer had any capacity to read? That's a thought experiment we can run with today. He says, so much of our gathered knowledge is in written form that it would be almost impossible to operate any technology. As an interesting experiment, says Lars, try setting your phone or computer to Cantonese or Mandarin. So, but for our 1 billion Chinese listeners, that wouldn't be a problem. But
not so impressive.
But I say to them, try setting your computer or phone to Swedish. Would that be, is that the language of Sweden? Swedish.
Yes, I believe that is the case. Yeah.
So that's an interesting question from Lars. And we're going to now enter the Gedanken experiment chamber. And to do so, we need special, we need to be safe about it. So Matt, why do we need to be safe? And then how can we be safe?
Well, changing the universe is a dangerous thing that often has unexpected consequences, which I guess is kind of why we have jobs, right? So taking safety precautions to make sure you can survive and thrive those changes to the universe. I think today you should probably start by making a backup of whatever document you're working on, because you're not going to be able to access it for a little while. And then we'll see where we go from there.
Indeed, indeed. Safety first. As we ask, what the if? You could suddenly no longer read. Would it affect your hearing? No, podcasts would become more important than ever. Ever. So I support this plan by Lars. This sneaky plan to change the world. As we ask, what if the human race could suddenly no longer read? So I note that it's interesting because to get Talmudic for a second, and you know, why not? It's Friday. It's Good Friday as well. Yep, so get on to double plus. Whenever we begin a thought experiment, we have to ask ourselves, is this a change that has always been, you know, like your wonderful example sometimes, what if we had no feet? So has it been that humans have never had feet? Or is it that this is a sudden change? And again, when I say Talmudic, you get down to the words, and Lars says suddenly no longer had the ability to read. So it's a sudden thing.
Yeah, that's right. So we have our current civilization.
Yeah.
And then tomorrow morning,
boom,
we wake up and nobody can read.
Yep. Is there any mechanism for that? Can you imagine?
Not really, no. I mean, you know, we could have it be a legal or social thing, right? Reading is suddenly forbidden.
But then you still would be able to do it.
You'd still be able to do it, yeah. So it's got to be some kind of bio-neurological thing. So I think that would be a tricky technobabble to do.
Right. So we do, what do they call it in sci-fi? They call it hand-wavium?
Hand-waving.
Yeah.
We call it in physics too. Yes, hand-waving. if you don't want to explain some detail, you say, well, I just wave my hand.
Did Einstein do that? Did he wave his hands?
Not while talking, if that's what you're thinking, but he did plenty of hand-waving in his calculations. Jerk.
Yeah, so humans can no longer read, and suddenly, so this is actually quite a fascinating thing, right? So, and we imagine it takes place, well, we can do it however we want. Is it a rolling thing? Does it slowly go around the Earth because it's from the sun or something? Or does it all happen? I think it has to all happen at once.
I think so, yeah. I think that's Lars's articulation of the situation is all of a sudden. Yeah.
Right. So for some people, they're in the middle of...
That's right. They're in the middle of reading.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so suddenly their copy of the New York Post doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And they're like, well, but how is that different than normal?
Right.
And they have to, so they sort of think through, and that would be a fairly upsetting thing, I think,
very
right?
So. You'd think you had a stroke or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Meanwhile, all the people, kids watching TikTok, no problem at all. They just continue dancing.
That is probably right. Yeah. So we could do that. So I guess different sorts of people will suffer the consequences of that in different ways. As you say, some people, depending on how they usually spend their time, because I don't know, there's probably people who go through an entire day without reading anything. Is that possible? I don't know. These days, everyone's at least going to be checking their phone, right? So that means texting.
That's true.
No more social media.
That's true. Right? In fact, they would first blame the phones.
That's right.
Right.
And say, Verizon's out again.
Yeah. All my Verizon, all my apps are gibberish.
Mm-hmm. But then they can just go over to FaceTime and communicate directly.
Right.
So people will actually have to use their words again, speaking. So that's doable. So I guess kind of moment to moment conversation is still possible. Right. People will probably be calling each other on the phone in a way they have not for a little while.
Yeah. And I was thinking, suppose you were teaching, mm-hmm. During the lecture, nobody may notice unless you had a slide up with text on it.
Yep, that's right. I write on the board a lot, but my handwriting is so bad that, as you say, people might not actually notice.
Maybe they could suddenly understand it. That would be as
that would be cool. Yeah. I mean, hopefully they're taking notes.
Oh, right.
Very quickly, their notes would become meaningless.
Right.
And certainly when they went back the next day to try and study. So, you know, what do we use writing for? We use it to put down ideas and knowledge so we can retrieve it later. Because it's kind of a weird thing to think about, but, you know, say, well, what does writing and reading do for us? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it provides a stability of knowledge over time. So it doesn't matter whether I forget that particular fact as long as I write it down. So that's a pretty powerful thing.
Yeah.
It's also stable in the sense that once something gets written down, you and I can both read it and agree on what it is that what that fact is and what that piece of knowledge is.
Yeah.
At least on some level.
Right.
Whereas if we both just see something happen and then we talk to each other about it, we might disagree about the details.
Yeah.
So writing gives a certain kind of stability, right?
Yeah.
So that makes it possible to have things like, legal codes that are stable over time.
Right.
Right. So in pre-writing societies, you would often have, I'm thinking of medieval Iceland, there would be a law speaker who was just the guy who knew all the rules. And when, you know, somebody committed a crime or something, you went and asked him, said, you know, is this a problem? And he says, yeah, or he says, no. whereas right now, if you and I wanted to figure out if something was a crime, we could go to the New York Public Library and get the law books off the shelf and flip through. And then we find the particular statute that says, I can't feed pigs on Saturdays. and that was what was written down by some, you know, city council member 150 years ago, and that has remained stable. But if we had just been relying on that one guy who knew all the rules after he died, it might be that no one knew about that rule about feeding pigs anymore.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I was imagining that lawyers may be the first to know, first to notice this problem, mm-hmm. because they're always looking at these documents very closely, and suddenly, even if the slightest thing in the document doesn't make sense, they have to call it out, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so thinking about jobs where people have to reference things on a regular basis, lawyers sounds good. Doctors, mm-hmm. right? You go to the mm-hmm. doctor, and the doctor says you need this particular medicine. The doctor would then look up, you know, the dosage for your body weight, and now they can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it might be that they remember it. But I don't know if I would want to take that to hope that that was the case, right?
Right.
Who else has to reference things on a regular basis?
Students.
I don't know. Cooks? students are, that's right. The whole learning apparatus is going to unravel fast.
Yeah.
And
scribes. I don't know if scribes is still a thing. But
I guess court stenographers, right?
Yeah.
But you know, we have the sense of going back in time, because there was a time when things were not written down regularly. So humans have already developed solutions to this problem back when they didn't know there was another alternative, and that was the oral tradition, right? Mm-hmm. So gigantic epics were were memorized and passed down more or less unchanged from generation to generation. Yep. Because people would compose their literature in a way that made it possible to memorize and repeat large amounts of stuff, right? So I think that, you know, classic examples here are things like the Iliad in ancient Greek literature. So it's structured and written in such a way that it's relatively easy to memorize and repeat. But it, also, you know, memory of that kind is a skill that you have to practice and get good at. And, you know, says Socrates complained about writing because he said nobody will ever memorize anything anymore. And if that's the case, he said, then you don't really understand something unless you have it in your head and can do stuff with it whenever you want. Yeah. So he says, if you need to go look at a book to get a piece of information, then you don't really know it. And so he railed against reading and writing because he was saying this is going to be the downfall of civilization because now no one will actually understand anything. Yeah. They'll just pretend they understand because they have the book at hand. He was right.
Yeah.
That's right. So we don't memorize things anymore. And, you know, I mean, I've noticed just my ability to hold things in my head has decreased dramatically since the advent of the smartphone because now I can write myself notes and I've got the calendar in my pocket. So since I don't call on my brain to do that kind of work anymore, it just has gotten bad at it.
Yeah. I would say though, in some ways we're still similar to how we were back in the days of the ancient Greeks because we still remember the great myths like Star Wars. You know, I had this image where suddenly people, when the world realizes people could no longer read, and like you said, we need to restart the oral tradition. We need to tell the great stories. All these parents sitting their kids and grandkids and great grandchildren down and saying, "Okay, so there's this giant triangular ship flying."
Well, and that's
this breathing guy.
Yeah. That's Ray Bradbury's solution.
Oh, what's
Fahrenheit
that?
451. Uh-huh. Right, is that all the books are banned and destroyed. So individuals memorize entire books from start to finish. And then and then they become that book. So you're like, that person is Star Wars and that person is Star Trek Episode 4.
Yeah.
And then when you want to read that book, you go talk to that person and they recite the book for you there, right?
Cool.
But if you and I both told the story of Star Wars, it would probably be pretty different, right? We would skip important details. And this is the, you know, kind of instability of the oral transmission of knowledge is that my grandkids will have a different version of Star Wars than your grandkids. And I don't know, they'll probably have an actual war over it at some point, right?
Yeah, that's right.
the holy war over whether Han shot first.
That's right. But that's probably how it was. That is the story, like even the Iliad passed down through all these generations is some leftover of having gone through the sieve of a million tellings, billions of tellings.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it probably, you know, there's probably some kind of survivorship bias here, where the version of the Iliad that survived is the one that was most easily memorized and remembered and passed on to, right? And then there are all these other versions that just disappeared in the mists of time. Yeah. So history is going to be kind of weird. Law is going to be kind of weird. Lars was particularly interested in the technology question. And I think it's a, you know, his example of setting your phone to a different language is a good one. My experience of that was when I was at a fellowship in Berlin many years ago, and they set me up with an office and a computer, which is very nice. But the computer was A, a Mac, which I don't use, and B, all in German. So like the operating system was in German, and then the keyboard was the German version too, which is very slightly different than the one we're used to. And the combination of an unfamiliar language and an unfamiliar operating system was too much. It was extremely difficult to do even the most basic things.
Yeah.
Even for something like a Mac, where the operating system is intensely visual and so nominally should be able to function without specific things. But that framework made it very hard.
Yeah, totally, totally. And it induces a sense of panic. Like, you're reminding me of being traveling and being places where, I remember even being in places where Hebrew or Arabic, where the, you know, languages where the language, where it goes the other way, it goes from right to left instead of left to right. And then sitting down at a keyboard and then looking at the screen and being like, whoa, all is lost. Yeah. There's no hope here.
But then, you know, this is, so in the, you know, your generation and mine, when we used to get a gadget or a new machine, we'd pull out the manual, right?
Right.
And we'd sit down with the manual and read through it and learn how to operate it.
And we loved
and that
it.
That was a fun thing, right? A well-written manual.
Yeah.
And there would be a lot of back and forth, right? You mess with the machine a little bit, and then you go check in the manual to see what's supposed to be going on, and then you get something else, and then you go back and try it again. So it's a back and forth process, right? It's not just you sit down at the manual and you learn everything you need to know. I think that is less common than it used to be.
There are no manuals.
Well, that's the thing, right? Yeah. When you get your iPhone, there is no manual. Nope. And I was very upset the first time I got an iPhone and I opened the box and I'm like, how am I supposed to learn how to use this thing?
Yep.
So it might be that some pieces of technology we can still continue to use if they're designed for that purpose, I think, or designed to be used that particular way.
Right. Like a car. You can still drive a car.
Cars, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, cars often do have manuals, but how often do you actually look at them?
Right.
Generally, only if anything goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might be a good way to think about it, is our technological lives would probably be fine until something breaks.
Yeah.
Because when something goes wrong that you want to go get the original information and figure out, and then you open up the back of the machine and you need some indication of what this button does and what that lever is for.
Well, the really cool thing about this is that it, just like your example of from Fahrenheit 451, that people, especially older people, become more important, right? Because I was thinking of something breaks in your car and you don't know how to fix it, and you can't read the manual anymore, you take it, what you would have done anyway, probably, you take it to the mechanic. The mechanic knows how to fix it. But at some point, there are younger mechanics who come into the shop, and they don't know, and the older, there's no way to teach them, so the older mechanic teaches them, and that's all kind of cool. However, it does remind me of the fact that something that we didn't have back in the early days of even the internet, which is abundant video. You can learn everything off YouTube. So YouTube would suddenly become like really strategically important. It'd be the only, YouTube and similar, sources of videos would be the only sources of knowledge.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So once we realize what's going on, as you say, you need to get the most experienced person in any given field and sit them down in front of a camera. Explain everything I might possibly need to know about this going forward. So there would be a lot of that.
Yeah.
I think that would actually not be as effective as we might hope. It's better than nothing.
Yeah.
Because very often, I mean, you're a teacher, you know what it's like. It often doesn't, even if you sit down and say, I'm going to write down everything I know about this subject, you don't, right?
Yeah.
You pick kind of random topics. And then until your students say, well, what about this? You're like, oh yeah, I forgot to talk about that.
Right.
And that's why,
that'd be a good book, by the way, that'd be a good book series for you. What's that? I forgot to talk about that.
Oh, I forgot to talk about that. That's true, actually. It would be good. Yeah, so this is why the apprenticeship model used to be the standard, mm-hmm. is you would just stand next to somebody while they were doing stuff, and then you would learn by watching and doing, and they would include you.
That's actually how I learned film editing, because of editing.
Oh, is that right?
In fact, the film business, again, not so much now, unfortunately, but certainly when I was coming up in the 70s, 80s, 90s, early 2000s, was definitely a guild type mm-hmm. thing. You know, you had editors who, and the assistant editor worked at the same time as the editor and learned the task. And a camera person has an assistant camera person. You know, a director has an assistant director. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. all designed to teach the next generation.
And for setups like that, writing was often threatening, actually, because some of those secrets might get out
right,
to people
right.
who weren't supposed to have it. So that's, I mean, this is not something I guess we think about very often, but there's a sense in which writing is a great equalizer, right? It makes it possible to move knowledge from place to place, yeah. In a way that might not be intended by the originator of the knowledge.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty big deal. You know, even in the Renaissance, you know, the early days of the scientific revolution, if you discovered something like, so say, Galileo looks through his telescope at Saturn and finds what nowadays we call the rings of Saturn. He doesn't know what they are. Oh. He just knows that Saturn has this weird shape.
Right.
So that's a great discovery, right? A celestial body that isn't a perfect sphere. But he's worried that if he just publishes it, then everyone will know and he won't get credit for it and people can just steal uh-huh, the idea. Uh-huh. So instead he writes it in code and then publishes the code.
No way.
And then when somebody else discovers the same thing, he holds up his code and says, ah, now I'm going to decode this and show that I discovered this months ago. But I just hid the truth from you.
Why did he not just publicize it right away?
Because back when communication was slow, let's say he publishes it in a book and copies of that book slowly make their way. You know, he's in Florence, mm-hmm. And a book, the first copy of the book makes it to Rome, and somebody grabs that copy and then rides north as fast as they can, and they get to Paris, and mm-hmm. then they publish the book under their name. Mm-hmm. They've actually gotten there before Galileo's original got there, so now they can convince everybody that they were the first people.
So he couldn't publish in the, he had a very slow website, essentially.
Essentially, yeah. And everybody did.
Yeah.
So the trick was to send the coded discovery out, and then once everybody had that,
genius.
Then you would reveal what it was.
That's cool.
And this is why, like, you know, alchemical texts are all coded, because it's this kind of secret knowledge, too. So I think we're definitely returning to a guild structure. Mm-hmm. And things like YouTube will subvert that a little bit, but I think probably not completely.
Well, the power of Google is already quite powerful in the world. Mm-hmm. In fact, the power of Google in the world is a bit daunting to actually imagine, right? The importance of it. But YouTube, so actually what's interesting is most of Google would be useless. The whole text thing.
Exactly. Dead. Every page of search returns
yeah.
gives you nothing.
Right? But the image, Google Images and Google Video, YouTube would be the only thing.
Yeah, you can't type anything into the search box anymore.
Right.
You would just need a auditory
They do have
interface,
that.
And that's doable. Yeah. I mean, that's not outrageous.
Yeah. But I just realized something. The comments, the horrible YouTube comments are done. We're liberated. Oh,
that is nice.
Maybe the world becomes a nicer place because YouTube comments.
Unless they're somehow all visual comments now.
Oh, yeah. You could leave your own video. that would be funny. Yeah.
Yeah. Surely that's a thing already, right? There must be something like that. I don't know.
But part of the thing with YouTube comments, as with Reddit comments back in the day too, it's anonymous, right? That's the whole thing. So you don't want to being able to.
Well, that's a good point.
But
that's right.
Anyway, so with YouTube.
Yeah, so I think our...
Well, I was going to say, with YouTube now becoming the primary... YouTube and let's just say video becoming the primary source of knowledge. As a video editor and filmmaker, I must say this sounds like a good thing now. This is a job
Well, that's true. You are now an extremely important person. Because you're the gatekeeper for all remaining human knowledge. And the question is really, how are you going to take advantage of that to increase your personal power and authority?
I guess you have to pay me for information, which is pretty much the same as...
what it is right now. No difference.
Yeah. I try not to give my documentaries away, you know, so... Well, documentaries in particular would also become primary, would become the, instead of nonfiction books of any kind, documentaries would be the nonfiction.
Oh, yes, source. That's right. Yeah, that sounds right.
Of course. It seems like we're going to slow down tremendously. In other words, it strikes me that one thing about the oral tradition was that it's incredibly slow, right? To pass on knowledge is like
insane. That's right. Yeah, that's right. So the speed of, because the speed with which I can write something down is, of course, dramatically faster than the amount of time it would take me to memorize it successfully. And then reciting it, right? There's a reason that the universities are structured, or schools in general, are, I give you this book, and then you go read it, and then you come back, and I check to see if you know it, right? Is that's a really fast kind of dissemination of knowledge. Because now with YouTube, that's going to be a little easier, because in the old days, you all would have had to gather around to hear me describe Star Wars in detail. But now a million people can watch me do it at the same time. So it would certainly be faster than it once was, than the old oral tradition.
It's interesting because I edit video and film, I am used to, as most editors are, listening. I can listen to things at double speed, sometimes even faster. And there's a lot of people that do that. I know people who are not filmmakers of any kind. They just, whatever, lawyers or whoever. Some people just like listening to the news at double. You can change the speed of your audiobook, for instance, and you can change the speed of YouTube videos. So I imagine that people begin to speak faster and faster. I don't know. Is it still a tradition, or is it still a thing where I saw a thing about young people doing debate, maybe even 10 years ago, but the thing had become, I don't know if this was all across the country, that the debate, they would speak ridiculously fast. Did you see that?
This is a thing. Because the rule is you have to respond to every single point that your opponent makes. So if you talk fast enough, then they might not be able to get to every single point you make. So it actually becomes this kind of nonsense.
It was the most
back and forth thing,
most uninteresting debates you could imagine.
Exactly right.
There's no Lincoln.
There's no content. But I think you're probably right that people will get good at talking fast and listening fast.
High bandwidth.
High bandwidth. Yes. And that will. And so, for instance, that's going to be challenging for me because I read fast, but I hear poorly. So I'm not going to be a fast communicator anymore. Well, that's not strictly true. I talk fast, but I don't listen well. So that's going to be a increasing problem. Well, or it's not so much a problem is that different skill sets are going to come to dominate. Right, my ability to read fast no longer matters.
Right. I think we may come up, because again, this is happening, let's say, in our modern age now. So I could imagine we come up with some sort of neural link thing, like some sort of brain transplant thing that then allows you to speak loudly. Or we could even maybe perhaps come up with Wi-Fi between each other's brains, something crazy.
And along those lines, we might forget that eventually we'll forget that there was ever anything else, right? There was no other way than just communicating directly by brain.
Yeah, and you forget your own password to your own brain. And you get locked out, which happens. You know, it's terrible. So where does this civilization wind up, let's say, hundreds of years from now? Do they make it?
Well, depends how good we are at the video archiving, actually. I mean, if we can successfully say, I'm skeptical about the ability of learning detailed technical things just by video. But I have friends who say they have done this. And I'm, I don't know.
What have they learned? Like what kinds of things?
I can't remember. There was something they described very, it was very tangible. I can't remember what it was. But for instance, Facebook has been showing me ads lately for virtual reality welding classes.
That's cool.
And it shows me this video, this ad constantly. I don't know why it thinks I want to be a welder. but that strikes me as insane, right? Like, so welding is an extremely dangerous, very physical, very embodied kind of thing. So the idea that just by watching videos or being in a virtual space, you could learn how to handle that, that seems totally impossible to me. But I might be an old fuddy-duddy on this. I think I might be the Socrates of the video age, where I feel like if you can't do that, that video can't capture essential things, but I might be wrong about that.
The astronauts, who get trained using VR have said that they were surprised that when they finally were in space, how much it was just like the training.
Is that right? That's quite
surprising. There's obviously certain elements that aren't the same, the weight of it or the mass, you know, and it's all kinds of different things, but that the fact of them looking through goggles in 3D at something and where the model that they were training on was very close to the kind of part that they were going to have to repair up in space, they were kind of like, wow, that's really real.
Yeah, so I like I said, I can accept that I might be thinking about this the wrong way now. Because my initial sense was we're essentially going to return to you know, middle age style guild systems. But maybe I'm wrong about that, and it'll actually be a radical egalitarian society where anybody with a smartphone now has access to all knowledge.
Yeah.
Because our library systems are wonderful, but they're still essentially built on the kind of medieval assumption. They are medieval institutions, and they're built on the medieval assumption of scarcity of knowledge, right? So we control who gets to go into libraries and who has access to books. And even nowadays, you know, there's all kinds of electronic resources available through libraries that we control as though they were physical books, right? There's nothing scarce about JSTOR. Everybody can use JSTOR and it doesn't go away. But nonetheless, libraries still make you pay to use it.
Yeah. JSTOR is a legal database.
Oh, it's no, it's kind of the everything database. It has kind of all the scanned scientific journals, scholarly writings, and things. So it's the first stop for just about everything.
Yeah.
If you're doing any kind of research,
that's cool. I appreciate that optimistic version. I have to say, I am afraid I'm going with a cynical version in my imagination, because I think that in the absence of the ability to get knowledge. And traditional knowledge and things like that bad political forces, you know, end up taking advantage of that, right? And so that also was something I suppose that happened in the medieval era, right? Or we wind up getting swept up in the guilds would become political organizations as well, and they would end up fighting.
Oh, almost, yeah, definitely, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if our current modern age with its huge influx of information is a particularly good example of how information can help prevent political difficulties. That is where we're doing pretty badly.
Yeah. Yeah.
with writing today.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know if it'd actually be any worse.
Cool. But I do salute the YouTube rules the world future. I think that's great. And I have a few friends who have YouTube shows, so I hope that they are benevolent leaders.
Okay. Yeah. If you can check in with them,
with your million and a half followers. Yeah. It'd be great if you're kind to them. Amazing. This is a really fun one. really fun one. Thank you, Lars. I'm glad I could read your email to bring this to life.
Yes, that's right.
It was super fun. If you have an idea for an if, send it our way. Just go to our website, whattheif.com. And if you're a Patreon supporter, thank you. Thank you, Patreon. Thank you for reading the emails which we send you. By the way, if you are a Patreon supporter, each week you will get an email that tells you, click here for bonus content that only you can read. So we will continue this exploration a little bit further with Matt and find out more about what's happening with Matt's plans for the solar eclipse. And by the way, we hope you have exciting plans for that as well, and that you'll be safe. It strikes me, Matt, maybe the reason you were getting welder lessons for welding was perhaps you were looking up welder's glass for the eclipse.
No. Yeah, that'd be nice.
I don't know. But yeah, get your welding mask on for the eclipse and look up the other things you can do to have a safe and fun eclipse. It's going to be super fun. Matt, will you help us? How do we get out of this nightmarish nightmare of illiteracy that we are living in right now?
Usually we have to confront what it is we have created. So I think probably what's going to happen is one of my grandchildren will wander into my office 50 years from now and look around at all of these bizarre piles of paper with random black squiggles on them, and they'll open one up and they'll say, "What the if?"
Thank you, Lars, as always. Shout out to all our listeners around the world and beyond. And a shout out to Gabby, who we hope will be back next week. At one point, she's going to be Dr. Gabby. And then We will all bow down and celebrate.
Be a great day.
Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next week.